and our ever-present PMG. I see Chairperson of ICASA is here also. Others which I didn't mention their name is because I'm not seeing them. But welcome. Welcome, Minister, to this meeting of the strategic plan for DOC 2011-2012. Members, we'll start by, as we understand that the strategic plan is a tool for the minister or to implement his policy view or his policy statement. That's why we've invited the minister as normal to be here, so that he's able to give us what is his policy direction or policy view around the issue of the ICT sector and the department. And then we'll go to the presentation, which is a strategic plan for the department. But Minister, if you've got other commitments, after your presentation, you are allowed to take other commitments, which you might be having in the line for today and so on. I will just send it to you, Honorable Minister, just to take us through in terms of your policy thinking. Where do you want to take us through as a sector and also the department? Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and to the members of the committee.
Minister, unless you're comfortable to stand, but you don't have to. If,
can I sit?
Yes, you can sit.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was greeting the members from the public who are here, as well as representatives from our portfolio organizations and executives from business and friends from the media and other government officials present. And in particular, let me also say a very good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, yes, you invited me to make some statements with respect to the Minister's policy thinking or approaches on policy in how that has begun to shape the strategic plans of the Department which we are presenting to the Committee this morning. But one of the most perplexing issues that all of this presents is a very profound question that I've begun to ask many, many colleagues as we engage with them. And I'd like to place the problem before the Portfolio Committee this morning, since I think all of the members of the committee here consider themselves to be experts on technology and ICTs, which I think they are. The other day I was asked by one of the business executives in one of the meetings I was having, and they said, tell me, Minister, since you guys are so familiar with computers, can you tell me, is a computer a male or a female? So I thought that was a very interesting question, Mr. Vandenberg. Don't you think so?
I think it's a silly question.
Is it? Do you have an answer for it? Is it appropriate? No, so he says, no, he thinks it's a female. So I asked him why. He says, no, you see, you spend a lot of time accumulating a considerable amount of money to buy this thing and to acquire this asset. And when you eventually do acquire this asset, you realize that it's actually the maintenance cost to even greater than the cost of acquisition. So he thinks it's got to be a female. So then the counter argument to that was, no, it's actually a male. He says, why is it a male? says, now, computer is a male because, you know, you also spend a lot of time thinking about this and deciding which of this one you'll get. Yeah. You don't spend much time. But when you get it, you think it's the solution, and then you discover that it's become the problem. So, it will remain a perplexing question for us, Comrade Chair, or Chairperson. But I think that it does in fact illustrate that indeed our sector is beset with even more serious and perplexing questions that we have to deal with going forward. And no doubt that one of the critical and central questions is exactly the question of what is our plan for this sector going forward. And it is a question that will call on us to think very hard on what our approaches are going to be to the policy vision for the sector. But perhaps the context within which we seek to address this challenge is also equally important. And that context arises from the recognition that we are investing in a very important project in this country for all our people. And that project centers around the need for us to develop a governmental system which is very performance-based and very outcomes-driven, so that all of us, whether those who serve in whatever capacity in government, in the state, in the legislature, and in the executives, can be measured by the results that we produce for the people. And ultimately, the fundamental principle that drives the search for a performance-based and outcomes-based governmental system is the need to stick to the truth, and that is our priority, overriding priority, is to serve the people of our country and to ensure that the mandates that we derive from the people to implement our activities in government are indeed met. It's a very, very important and fundamental principle, and it's necessary that we all the time recall the central principle in whatever work that we do and in whatever mechanisms we have to assess and measure the progress on which we are delivering on that promise to the people. And this event here today is but one of the many events that must help us to measure whether we are on the right track. So, underlying all of this is the acceptance of another important principle, and that principle is the principle of accountability. The need for all of us in public work to recognize in one way or the other we are accountable for our actions, we're accountable for what we do. We're accountable not only to each other because we're in a conjoint endeavor to serve the people, but we are accountable to the institutions of government, to the structures that are there, structures like yourself, and we are accountable to the people. And that brings us to the importance of this year, 2011, because this year, government, particularly at the local sphere, has to go back and account to the people for what it has achieved in the last so many years of local government. It's an important year because in May, all of us go back to the people and ask for their mandates to establish the structure of local government. And it also brings into focus in May the need for us to continually renew the mandates that our people give us. So for all these reasons, these are important moments at the moment, and it is in the spirit of that kind of definition that the Department of Communications comes to this portfolio committee meeting, embodying all those principles and giving recognition to all those values. So it is with great pleasure that I'm here present today with the DOC team, and I can tell you, Chairperson and members of the committee, a very rejuvenated team, a team that has acquired a great deal of new inspiration and a new mission with respect to service to the people and with respect to the desire to reestablish this department and ministry and this sector to a place of pride in government's work. So I'm pleased here that there are some members from my office who are here. There's Mr. Raymond Reddy, who is the head of my office, Dr. Sharon Horton, who is my executive PA in the office. I think Tiani Ricotso is here, who is the public spokesperson for the minister. And we are led from the department side with the acting DG, Dr. Harold Vessel, and he has with him, and you can see in full attendance, a strong team of deputy director generals and supported by the technical staff of the departments. So you can see that the DOC is taking this presentation very seriously, and we trust that at the end of it all, you would come to the realization that a considerable amount of hard work has been put into developing what we are about to present. So I don't need to take too much of your time, because I want to give the DOC the time to really do the presentation and do justice to it. I would just focus on two things, which would perhaps set the canvas for what you are about to hear from the departments. And the first one is that you will see on the slide up there, it says strategic alignment, and it speaks to what I've just said. That on the top right-hand side, you would see that we are determined in the whole of government to ensure that we deliver on the mandates that we've got, and that is the definition of governmental priorities drives the entire government's program. And in terms of that, government has decided and determined what are the outcomes it would want to measure itself through a performance management and monitoring system. And in relation to those outcomes, defined as they are, the whole of the governmental machinery, all the ministers have had to sign a performance agreement with the president. And in the performance agreements are determined the outcomes for which we are held directly accountable, in which the departments that we lead, the ministries that we lead, have got to deliver on those outcomes. Now, those outcomes are driven by what we call relevant outputs, that is, specific targets that have been determined for each one of those outcomes, which guides us on what it is that we should be achieving. Now, it is out of that that the department then derives what we may define as its strategic goals and its specific strategic objectives that would measure and monitor the progress of the delivery that we're expected to do. Now, you will see that in that trajectory of events, or sequences of events, the strategic plan occupies a very important component, because in a sense, the strategic plan over the medium term is the compass which guides the work. So it's not a hodgepodge of activities that are disconnected from the overall discourse on an outcomes-based government. It has a very crucial role to play in that it is a strategic guide map that defines in much more specific terms the activities that we are supposed to undertake that would deliver on the outputs that we want. So that slide is important. Now, in the nature of things, you know that we can be busy doing a lot of things, and all of them cannot occupy the same degree of emphasis and weight in what it is that we want to measure ourselves as having to have achieved after the years of activity, because we are not only in the medium term for 3 years, but we also have to define by the end of 2011, what it is that we really want to say we've made progress on. So in that context, we have just determined 8 flag...
6.
We have determined 6 flagship projects or programs in the department stroke ministry that we are placing a very serious focus on in this year. And the department will speak to that and tell you what it is. And we trust that those flagship projects or programs speak to what is the priority in the way we want to develop the sector, or the way we want to set the platform for the development of the sector, because this is, in many ways, a platform-setting exercise. And that leads us to the second conundrum and second dilemma that we face. And that is that, and I've been particularly vocal on this in my engagements thus far with many stakeholders, and that is that, how do you do this in the context of a 5-year term of government, but also, how do you do this without some conception of how you want the sector to be built over the medium to long term? And it then calls into being the necessity for us as a sector as a whole to come to some kind of collective consensus on what the medium to long-term strategic vision ought to be for the ICT sector, so that we are not just only measured in terms of every 5 year when you renew your governmental mandate. We have to have some kind of way of saying to ourselves that in 20 years from now, this is what we think this sector should be about. And if you take the history of most of the countries that have progressed, for example, South Korea, that's exactly what they did. They started many years ago and said, we want to be the number one ICT country in the world in so many years. And that's exactly what they did. And so today, after about 15 years of development in the ICT sector, when they were in the complete backwaters, they rank as the number one ICT country in the world. It means that it is possible to do it if you have a vision of what you want to do. It is possible to improve on your rating if you know where you want to go. You know, the saying is that if you don't know where you're going, anyway is fine. So you've got to know where you are going. And it means that we have to develop that. So we are putting on the agenda also and introducing the subject of the need for this long-term vision for the ICT sector. And we've discovered in trying to answer that question that in government itself there is no consistent view of what is a long-term benchmarking date. The National Planning Commission talks about 2025. The Gauteng Premier talks about 2050, and KZN talks about 2014. So even in government, the discourse on at what point in the future are you marking yourself to measure what this vision is still needs to be consolidated. So after consultation, we felt for the ICT sector, we are going to introduce the notion of a 2020 vision for the ICT sector, so that we use 2020 as the benchmarking point as to what we want to look like in the year 2020. And we are placing this on the agenda. And you see that on the slide itself, we're already starting to get from the international protocols date marks, which tell us what we ought to achieve. For example, there's some statistic which relates to BDM, and which targets the year 2013. Then there's the year 2014, by which we're expected to subscribe to some global commitment on MDG goals. And then in our own sector on VISIS, there are certain international acceptances that we have to achieve by 2015. So we've gone slightly outside these international marks and have said, now let's look at where we want to be in the year 2020. So what you're about to receive today from the department, as I said, is an important first-level thinking of the platforms that we are creating to launch us into this medium to long-term vision. Now, this medium to long-term vision has not been spelled out. So there's still a process that would involve a multi-stakeholder participation in developing it. But we are just placing the idea and introducing the subject so that it begins to be part of the active thinking of your agendas. So that when the process does in fact get unfolded through the departmental leadership, you will all be up to the task of making a very important and substantive contribution. Chairperson, let me also take this opportunity to apologize for the Deputy Minister. He is being called on another mission which the Minister had to attend to, but he is now standing in for the Minister in an important function and he therefore is not able to be here. And with those introductory comments, I'd like to pass the baton over to the Acting DG, Dr. Wessel. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. For foregoing the other engagement and to come here. I'm not sure, Minister, at what time do you want to be...
Chairperson, with your permission, the Minister would like to stay in the session and has blocked out this time to listen very carefully to the inputs from the members of this committee, so I shall be here.
That too, Vest.
Minister Pagliacci, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues from the Department and SOEs, good morning. Allow me to start by introducing the DOC team that we have here, and I'm going to ask them to just indicate where they're sitting. With us here is Ms. Rosie Sakesi, DDG ICT Infrastructure Development, Mr. Gift Buthelezi, DDG ICT International Affairs and Trade, Mr. Norman Zalele, Acting DDG Policy, Mr. Temba Piri, Acting DDG PNC on ISAT, Mr. Sam Vilakasi, Acting DDG Finance and ICT Enterprise Development, Mr. Farhat Osman, Strategic Planning and Monitoring, and Ms. Pearl Siopela, Media and Communications. Honorable Chairperson, you have the slides in front of you, also the full strategic plan. You see that there are about 70 slides. I'm not going to talk to all 70 slides, only the first 47 up to page 24. From there on, there are two annexes, and the annexes, especially annex A, is meant to be a summary of the strategic plan. So I will not go through that detail, but we will focus, as the Minister has indicated, on the flagship programs and our interventions for the next financial year. As part of the contents, we will start off with the DOC vision and mission. I think it's important that we have a few contextual slides so that we know how we position the Department of Communications in terms of international best practice, in terms of what we're supposed to be doing in this country. All the slides that we're going to deal with are actually, we've worked very hard to get some alignment between what we're doing in the department and its alignment to other processes in government. We've included three slides towards the end, and Mr. Temba Piri will talk to those. Our own South African e-barometer index. For the first time we have a government-produced index to indicate whether we're improving, whether we're declining, and so forth, but Mr. Piri will talk to that. And then Mr. Sam Vilakasi will lead us in the financial discussion. So, Honorable Chairperson, I think to start with, I think we need to understand, first of all, so that we're all on the same page, what our mandate is, what our mission is, and what our vision is. Now, there are very, very important notions and concepts hidden in our mandate, mission, and vision that I would like to put to you right at the beginning, so that you can keep it in mind as we move along the presentation. Our mandate talks about a vibrant ICT sector that ensures that all South Africans have access to affordable and accessible ICT services to advance in what's very important socio-economic development goals. So ICT is not for the sake of ICT, but I think very, very importantly, it's a vehicle to promote socio-economic development. Our mission is also very clear, and I think we need to keep that in mind as well. And that is that we're supposed to build an inclusive, with a focus on inclusive, information society, knowledge-based economy. That is what we have to work on very, very hard. Then our vision is also very clear that to be a global leader, we have to focus on the development and use of ICTs. Not only the development of ICTs, but the use. So keep these concepts in mind. And again, there is the focus on socioeconomic development. The next slide is just to give you the context of where the world is going. And in that slide, you see that we've gone a long way from the 1800s to where we are today. Today the world is about information. It's the information age, and we talk about the e-world. We're in the e-world. E-commerce, e-government, e-health, e-business, all the E's. That's the world we're in. But we also know that there are countries in the world that have moved beyond the e-world. South Korea is no longer talking about e-Korea. They're talking about u-Korea, ubiquitous Korea. And that is where the world is going. And that is where we will have to go as well. And that is why the minister is very clear on our mission. And that is, what is the world going to be like in 2020? How do we prepare the world of ICT in South Africa for the world of 2020. The next slide, I think, is also very important. And that slide indicates that ICT is not only, if we want to build the information society, if we want to build an economic-based society, it is not only about infrastructure. Many people think that if you give people a computer and if you put fiber in the ground, then it's okay. Then we have done our bit in terms of the information society. That's wrong. We also have to have a focus on the services, what is going through these pipes. Also very important is the institutions that we build for the information society knowledge economy. We still have very much industrial-aged institutional arrangements. We have to build knowledge economy institutions. And sometimes we lose sight of the people that we have to provide for. And that is the top layer, that we have to deal with society, both in its urban domain and rural domain, and anything in between. So, like that slide reads, society, both urban and rural, depends on institutions, government departments, other institutions, to get to the services built for multiple ICT infrastructure. So it's not only, the DOC is not only about ICT infrastructure, like we said in our vision and mission, all those things, it's about socioeconomic development, and the socioeconomic development is about people. The next slide is also very important. This is from the ITU, a recent report, indicating if we need to impact on society, and if we want to build this inclusive information society, there are three things that we have to do, that we have to focus on. That is, first of all, ICT readiness, infrastructure, access. But if we only deal with infrastructure and access, and that is where most of the debates are happening, most of the research, you know, it's dealing with a macroeconomic environment, with regulation and policies and infrastructure development, market analysis, that's fine within the context of providing access and infrastructure. The issue is, if people don't use that, and ITU says, ICT use is very important. That's 40% of the issue. So our focus normally is on 40% of the issue. 60% is about uptake and usage and skills development. So as the Department of Communications, we have to have this holistic view if we have the mandate and the vision to build an information society. What we must also understand, this is the last contextual slide, is that we live in a world of Web 2.0 through the internet. So we live in a world of Google and Yahoo and Mixit and YouTube and Twitter and all the social media stuff. So if we only focus on the telecoms part of life, we're going to lose the battle in building the information society. So that is why 2020 is so important. What will 2020 be in terms of technology? And do we have proactively built a policy and regulatory environment for 2020? Do we think about those things? So DOC is really trying now to position the department not in terms of tomorrow, but also in terms of the future. And it is more difficult, but I think we get to think about these things and to provide for our people. That's enough for the context within which we've built our flagship programs and other programs in the department. A brief overview. The medium term, if you look at the strategy document, we have 8 strategic goals supported by 17 strategic objectives. And we believe that with that kind of focus, we will be able to deliver. Not too many. It is achievable. And these strategic goals and objectives are to be realized through the achievement of numerous 3-year targets, which in turn contribute towards the government outcomes. That's our point of departure. The 12 government outcomes, and how can the DOC deliver towards achieving those outcomes. And then the 3-year targets will be allocated across the 6 programs of the department, and in certain instances, the achievement of these targets, and that is why it's very good that our SOEs are here, will require collaboration with our SOEs. And not only with our SOEs, but also with our partners in the private sector. That's why important the minister met with 30 private sector corporations, but also civil society organizations. In building the information society and an inclusive knowledge-based economy is not going to be possible if we have only one organization or institution dealing with those matters. We have to build what we call a network architecture in terms of delivering on the goals and objectives of the department. Then we come to Honourable Chairperson and members, to the crux of the matter, and that is our strategic alignment. Now, I assume that all of you have read the 12 outcomes of Cabinet. We have included a slide there, right from improving quality basic education to number 12, an efficient, effective, and developmental-oriented public service, and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship. We believe, and not believe, but we know, that we can, as an ICT department, we can contribute to all of those outcomes. All of them, ICT has a serious role to play. also to indicate to you that although we regard the 12 outcomes as central to our activities and our thinking in the department, we also have to take cognizance of other very important documents, government documents. It is the medium-term strategic framework, so we've looked at that. It is the new growth path, we've studied that, so to make sure that we are aligned to those documents. But we also have to keep in mind the medium-term, the World Summit on the Information Society, the action lines that we have to report on, and we also have to keep our eyes on the Millennium Development Goals, because we also have to report on those. So within the context of the 12 outcomes, we had to make sure that in building our flagship programs and our delivery plan for the minister, that we include in our strategy all of these external documents. The next slide gives you another sense of the complexity of the environment within which we operate. There you see we have the minister's priorities, the 11th November 2010 statement. We have to consider the State of the Nation Address, the January Lakotla, the EME. We have to position ourselves within the context of our resource constraints. We have organizational challenges. So we have the outcomes of the delivery program of the minister, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7 from the outcomes. We have to consider more outcomes, 2, 5, 10, 11, and 12. And at the basis of all of this, if we do this alignment, we also have to think about job creation. And that is the key word or words nowadays is job creation. So the DOC then sit down and say, how do we really position ourselves within the context of all this multiplicity of government policy positions and strategic initiatives to come up with our own plan? The minister talked to this. But this is very important. I think in the ICT space, we cannot function only with tomorrow in mind. We have to consider the future, where we will be in the future. Because our kids will be born in the future. And it is important why we as a DOC department will have to deal with that. But the next slide, if you see there, 2015, the next slide, you know, a study, the Blue Peter study of 2004, you know, says that several emerging technologies will be crucial to the development of the ICT sector in South Africa towards 2015. And they say that 2015 technologies will be mobile, wireless, open source software, and telemedicine, geomatics. Now, we're there already, and it's 2011. The 2011 world is about mobile, wireless, open source, and so forth. We're even beyond that now. We talk about cloud computing. We talk about social media. So we're beyond what was predicted in 2004. Just imagine what the world will be in 2020 in terms of technology and how we will have to proactively respond to those emerging technologies. All of us, the DOC and its SOEs. You can skip that slide and you can go on to the flagship programs. Now, after hard work and a lot of thinking that has gone into it, the department and the minister came up with six flagship projects, six areas where we will really work very hard. This is must. We have to succeed in these. And the first one is job creation. We need to consider in what we're doing, what we will contribute to creating jobs. Now, a department like the DOC can create jobs indirectly by supporting other industries, but sometimes also directly. So we will have to sit down and understand our particular role in job creation. And be busy with that. The next flagship project is about e-skills. How do we deliver people with the appropriate skills, not only at university or FET college level, but in society? We need to skill, to e-skill the nation to be ready for the world of tomorrow. And that is what the e-skilling focus is all about. Of course, broadband, a key focus for us at this point in time, but also the basis and the foundation for going forward. Then, of course, DTT, Digital Terrestrial Television, that is a key focus for our department. The post bank, that is very important in taking the banking, in banking in South Africa to our people, and not only to give them access to banking, but also to create jobs in that regard. And number six is about rural connectivity. So it's not only the urban, it's the rural. So those are the six flagship projects that we will focus on in the next financial year and make sure that we deliver on those things. Now, if you look at broadband, our key interventions when we think about broadband is to do everything in our power and in our intellectual power to increase broadband penetration. You know, there's just no way. We need to increase the penetration because that will also impact positively on economic growth. Develop a broadband strategy and implementation plan. That is key to get synergy in the country around broadband development and implementation. Also to incorporate broadband legislation in the ECA amendment bill that will be introduced to Parliament. And also finalize provinces and municipalities' broadband guidelines. As you know, that there are many interesting things happening at a provincial and local authority level regarding broadband provision, and we need to have a national plan in terms of guiding all these initiatives. The next slide is just to give you an indication why broadband is important. It's not only about to have broadband to download and upload faster whatever we want to download or upload, but broadband is about creating jobs, it's about network providers, it's about content providers, it's about service providers. In all those areas, we can create jobs in the country. But also about the impact that broadband will have on government, on the health sector, the education sector, business, entertainment. So broadband is not only the technology, but it's about what we're doing with it. What is the content that we will pump through all these nice big pipes coming into the country under the sea. So the DOC will have to provide leadership in this regard so that we can use our broadband capacity effectively and efficiently. Of course, the post bank is for us a serious project, and what we will focus on in the next financial year is to develop appropriate borrowing, investment, and lending policies to ensure that our post bank will deliver to the poorest of the poor. Then DTT, as a flagship project and the interventions there, is about accelerating the implementation of the broadcast and digital migration policy in totality, ensure the availability of affordable set-top boxes, proper governance model for the BDN program to capacitate a digital migration project office, amend the BDN policy to reflect the new timelines adopted by Cabinet, finalize and implement the STB manufacturing sector development strategy, finalize and implement the SOS for DDT STB's rollout plan, implement the consumer and education awareness campaign, develop the local and digital content development strategy, facilitate and monitor the DTT infrastructure rollout. That means 80% of the population coverage achieved already. You know, next flagship project is about e-skills, that we, in the new financial year, will focus on developing e-skills training programs, development and implementing e-skills awareness campaign, expand the ICT Career Expo, expand the network of universities, FET colleges and corporate schools by another 4 universities and or corporate schools and or FETs, and we're also working on the international collaboration programs, and to implement e-skills training for at least 1,100 youth and unemployed graduates. The next slide is just to give you a sense of what e-skilling means. It's not more ICT skilling, but if you look at that slide, you see that traditionally, when you talk about IT teaching or IT, then the focus is on a technology, on the device and on technology. E-skilling means that you have to focus on technology, business, and people in a collective way. So apart from your technology skills and competencies, you also need to have, in the new world, inherently in your training and teaching, the business and people skills. Our rural connectivity focus, that is to adopt and implement the ICT Rural Development Strategy, to operationalize the SME e-commerce portal, to establish 400 digital hubs in rural areas, facilitate the rollout of low-power transmitters to cover 5 million inhabitants. The next flagship project is about job creation. The DOC has identified 4 critical areas which could facilitate the creation of approximately 150,000 jobs over the medium to long-term period. They include broadband infrastructure and services, as I mentioned to you early on, DTT infrastructure, rollout, it will create jobs. And then thirdly, is about creative industries. This is a new focus in a department. Creative industries worldwide is a multi-billion rand industry and employing thousands and thousands of people worldwide. It is in its infancy in this country, and we need to build that. SME and capacity building, manufacturing of electronics, regulatory environment, and postal sector, including the post-bank outlets rollout. So in those areas, we will focus in terms of creating the space and environment for creating jobs. The next slide is just one, because it's a new focus area for the department, is about creative industries. And you can see there in creative industries, you know, it's from art and antiques and crafts on the street to digital industries focusing on content, social media, computer games, music, radio and TV, film. Radio and TV is very important to us in terms of creative industries, and in particular community radio, where we can really become much more innovative and build capacity and create jobs in that environment. So in the technology-aided environment, I think the digital space, the DOC plays its role in terms of developing creative industries. The next slide is just to give you a sense of the jobs that we will be able to create. In some areas, we have a clear budget. In other areas, we have to consider budget there still, but also we will do things in collaboration with the private sector and with other institutions, other departments in government. So we're working on those budgets, but we think that we will be able to deliver on those. But it is just to give you a sense of how we broke down the different elements of our job creation focus. So those are the 6 flagship projects. You know, it's already when we open our eyes, and, you know, during nighttime and we can't sleep, is because of the 6 flagship projects. It's in our mind all the time. And I think that is what it will have to be like for the next financial year. But we also have other priorities. It's not only the 6. And we'll take you briefly through those. Of course, we have to to deal with our policy and regulatory environment in a much more innovative way. As we've said, I mean, things in the ICT space are really developing very fast. So we will have to accommodate our policy environment, not only in the telecoms environment, but we live in a different world, and we have to also consider policies and regulations for other elements in the environment except for telecommunications. So we're working on an integrated ICT policy framework that will deal with these matters. The SAPU Bill, the ECA Communications Act, amendment to the ICASA Act, the ICASA Performance Management System, the public, just to add to that, also the Public Broadcasting Service Bill and the Postal Services Amendment Bill must be added there. So there's a lot of policy and regulatory work that will have to happen in the next financial year. Spectrum management is another key focus area for us. To validate current national radio frequency spectrum plan from 20 gigahertz to 100, also to facilitate efficient utilization of the radio frequency spectrum. That is key for us as a secondary key project. Cybersecurity for us is very important. We need to finalize in collaboration with other departments in government the cybersecurity policy. Also, of course, a very important project for us in the department and the passion of the minister is the stabilizing of public entities and their alignment with government priorities to ensure alignment of plans, signing of shareholder compacts, and undertake performance monitoring. Establish, and that is very important, a branch in the department that will oversee compliance and also to ensure strategic alignment. That is how serious the department is about this. To monitor implementation of recommendations of previous corporate governance reviews, commission an independent review of corporate governance practices, review articles of association of SOEs, facilitate the development of action plans and monitor its implementation to address specific audit findings of SOEs and ICASA so as to prevent recurrence of adverse audit findings in PMA transgressions. Also a new area for the Department of Communications is within the context of climate change and the green economy. We have to, it's also something that's been talked about in the country, but I think that the DOC has a role to play in terms of green IT or green ICT. So we will develop a first comprehensive report on green ICTs within the context of the green economy with specific focus on R&D, ICT diffusion, skills and awareness, and also the potential for job creation. I think there's a different area for us to deal with in terms of creating jobs. We think about waste management, we think about the refurbishment of computers and software application development, and so forth. Then secondly, or next, is reducing the cost and improving the quality, availability, and usage of ICTs. That remain a very important matter for us going into the future to bring down the cost, to make ICTs more affordable and accessible. E-connectivity, to integrate the integrated connectivity plan for health centers and schools, developed and approved. That is work that has been done and will see implementation in the next financial year. Then ICT sector and SME development, of course, it is important for us to provide leadership in this regard, to develop national incentive schemes for the domestic ICT industry, and we will have a serious look at the incentive schemes announced by the President in his State of the Nation address. So that work will happen soon. Identify the strategic value and economic strength of South Africa's creative industry sector. SMEs can really play a very important role there, And I think it's important that we also provide leadership and support in that regard. We also plan the establishment of what we call application factories linked to the eSkills Institute. Now, in the academic environment, we talk about laboratories. Now, that's laboratories, I mean, that's an old concept. We're moving into the future to establish application factories instead, with a view of also giving our students the skills to produce software and applications. And that is an opportunity for our young people to create small businesses or to become self-employed. Then also facilitate entry of 60 additional youth-owned and managed e-cooperative enterprises. Implementation of the action plan to benefit SMEs in the broadcasting digital migration value chain and uptake in usage strategy developed with focus and business. Then also international relations. We will put on a new jacket there. I mean, we live in a world also where the economic environment is changing every day from the west to the east, the BRICS, the IPSAS, all this world, and I think from an international point of view, we have to make sure that we utilize the opportunities being presented by the change in the economic world to benefit job creation at the local level in South Africa. The next three slides, Honorable Chairperson, I will ask Mr. Themba Phiri to give us just a brief view of the e-barometer that is being developed in the department. And I think this is a first for the DOC, so we can start measuring our own work and to see whether we're growing or whether we're declining, and Mr. Phiri will give us a brief overview in that regard.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. Thank you, Dr. Veso. Just to give a brief synopsis on this one, the e-barometer index is informed by the measurement for indicators around the Millennium Development Goals and as well as the World Summit on Information Society action line. And in this index, we focus on 35 indexes, which together forms this e-barometer index that we're talking about. And the main focus has been on six sectors, that is ICT sector, government, education, individuals, household, and community. At the end, you are trying to understand how is penetration of ICTs in society shaping, and this is important to inform the Vision 2020 we are talking about. In essence, the output has to be a measure for what we call a compound annual growth rate. That rate specifically tells us, for instance, how many households have access to, say, for instance, internet, or radio, or mobile services, as it were. Now, in your slide 39, you have a diagram depiction there for the sectors that I have already referred to. In essence, the understanding is that between 2000 and 2009, the compound annual growth rate has been growing steadily, but it has not been a smooth rise, as you can see. For instance, there has been a slow growth between 2006 to 2009. Yet the average growth between 2006 to 2009 has been at a rate of 3.01%. And this is informed by several sectors. Among these is increased uptake in internet, mobile subscription, access to radio and television. In essence, what you can pick up from that slide is that activities such as the construction or the availability of telecentres throughout society are very important, because those will give a population access to internet services, as it were. Furthermore, the in between 2000 and 2009, you would realize that some of these activities has been very slow, and hence it accounts for the 1.29 growth, which is not so good for a comparator country like South Africa when it's compared to, say, for instance, India and Brazil. In essence, this is what we're trying to depict there, that if we are talking about a Vision 2020, we have to understand what has been the key drivers for contributing to growth and development of the ICT sector and meeting people's needs. Going forward, it means you have to have specific areas of targets which are important for you to focus on as we go towards 2020. Thank you very much, Dr. Besson and Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Piri. So there's a clear indication there's a lot of work to be done in terms of growth in all these sectors that we're talking about. Our next and last section, Honourable Chairperson, is information about the financials, and I will ask Ms. Sambulakasi to take us through the next few slides.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister, Honourable Members, and thank you, ADG. I'm going to be presenting the financial information. The first slide, which is number 43, deals with the MTF baseline allocation for 2011-12, 2012-13, 2013-14. For the financial year 11-12, the department has been allocated 1.8 billion. Included in this figure are once-off items, and those are for Centec Dual Illumination, USASA for set-top box subsidies, as well as broadband ICT, that is for universal access. Subtracting the once-off items, the remaining balance there is about 1.4. That represents a decrease of about 11.6%, as the department previously, or in the previous financial year, had a budget of about 2.1 billion. In the next financial year, there's also a slight decrease there, wherein the figure moves from 1.8 to 1.7. Also, there's a slight decrease of about 8.9. And in the financial year 13-14, there is a slight increase of about 7.5%, pushing up the allocation to 1.8 billion. The following slide deals with the breakdown of the figures that I've presented for both the department as well as for the SOEs. There are currently six programs in the department. The first program is governance and administration, which is more support. It's allocated 148 for 11-12, which takes up about 7.86%. 12-13, it takes up about 157, also a slight decrease there. And the final year, or the year 13-14, 165. The second branch, ICT International and Trade, 40 million, 11-12, 12-13, 38, and 13-14, 39. ICT Policy Development, 77 million, that's 4% of the budget, 76 in the following year, and the third year, 78. And also included in the ICT policy development, there are small transfers that takes up about 0.93% of the budget, 1.07, 1.05. The fourth branch, which is ICT enterprise development, has got two components. The first component takes about 12 million, which are mainly for SMME as well as for the oversight function, increasing to 15 as well as to 16 in the year financial year 13-14. The bulk of the money, which forms 67.5% of the budget, are basically transferred to the entities sitting at 1.2 billion in the financial year 12-13, a slight decrease there to 1 billion, and in the third year, there's a slight increase to 1.1. ICT infrastructure development, which is the fifth branch in the department, takes up about 279, which is 14.79%, 335 in the next year, and the third year, 394. The increase in this branch is mainly due to the broadband allocation, as well as the 112 call center that has always been a standing item in this branch, and there's a small transfer of about 1.5. The last branch in the department, which is Presidential National Commission, takes about 1.84% in the year 11-12, and 12-13, 1.94, which is 33 million, and the final year 13-14. It takes up about 34 million, which is 1.88. Moving to the next slide, which is slide number 45. This is just a chart to indicate where the money goes. As I've already indicated, that the bulk of the money goes to the entities, and followed by infrastructure branch at 279 and some small transfers, and the rest of the allocations, they go to different branches within the department. Going to the breakdown of the transfers, which is slide number 46, details the transfers to all the entities, starting with the regulator for the over the MTF period. If you look at the ICASA, there it takes about 313, 11-12, 324, 12-13, and the year 13-14, it takes about 342. Centec, 279, 166, the second year, and the third year, 176. Universal Service and Access Fund, 260 for 11-12, 273 for 12-13, and the fund, the third year, 13-14, it takes about 289. Support subsidy, 11-12 sitting at 180, second year, 12-13 sitting at 51, 13-14, 54. I think there's a slight decrease there, mainly due to the fact that support subsidy would at some point be phased out. SABC Public Broadcaster, 11-12 takes 84, 12-13 takes 89, and 13-14 takes 94. USASA, the agency, 11-12 83, 12-13 59, 13-14, they take up about 63. Channel Africa, 11-12, 41, 12-13, 43, and 13-14, 45. And lastly, NEMISA, 11-12, 33, and 12-13, 34, and 13-14, 35 million. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bulakasi. Honorable Chairperson, that is our presentation. We believe that we have a strategy that is implementable, it is focused, it is aligned to the key government programs, policy and strategy positions, and I think we will tackle the new financial year with energy, to ensure that we deliver on the strategy presented to you here this morning. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, DOC. There are some slight challenges before I give to the members. Can someone talk to what you have presented to Parliament? You table a strategic plan to Parliament, this one. Your presentation Can someone just get a link of the two documents? Because what is in the public eye and officially this document, which is published, if published in Parliament, is a public information. When you read this, I just want to try to the finish. When you read this and the presentation, somewhere they try to link, but maybe if someone can just harness that so that maybe it can be easy for members to raise questions.
Yes, Honourable Chairperson, the presentation is on the strategy. All the items that we've been talking to, you will find listed in the strategy. The idea was to not to go through the strategy, you know, list by list or item by item, but rather have a more focused presentation on and grouping of all the elements that we find in the strategy. You will see that attached as annexures to the presentation from page 48 onwards, you will find from page 25 onwards, you will find also a summary of what is in the strategy document in terms of government outcomes, strategic goal number one, strategic goal, strategic objective, and then the key targets. So what we've done was to, in order to focus our discussion, we said, well, let us present in a summarized way on the strategic document. So what we've discussed, or what we've presented, is in the strategy document and in the annexion and in the original document.
Maybe it's my confusion, members understand. I'll just give it to members. Honorable Van der Berg, Ndabeni, Magazi.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I also want to thank the DOC for this presentation. And since I arrived in Parliament, I can clearly state that this was very clear what you said this morning. And I think you set a lot of goals, but you're also going to sort of measure yourself and how you go on the road. I just want to ask a couple of things. In the first instance, I think DG, we heard in Parliament yesterday that the Department of Communication was one of the departments that underspent a lot on their budget over the past year. If my memory serves me correctly, the presentation I heard was that the DOC only spent 40%. If you can correct me if I'm wrong, 40% of the budget. So this is a very low percentage, and thinking of the very important stage we are in now with the ITC sector and the way forward, etc., etc., if you can give some clarity on that. And maybe it's a very comprehensive question. I don't think it's necessary to go to every single part. But if I ask you, I've listened very carefully to your flagship programs, and I think it's wonderful programs to drive this whole issue. But I just want to know, we are on the move to 2020, but to get there, we must know where are we now and what do we have to do to reach that. I think this is more a political question for the minister, but maybe Dr. Visser, you can help me there. So then we know, what do we have still to done before, for instance, that we can reach that goal of 2020, we must need to know where we are now. That is all. Thank you, Chairperson.
Oh, 2020. Dr. Bessel, your mic is on. We we might not be recording some discussions.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everybody here. Let me first welcome the presentation from DOC. Chairperson, your concern that you raised earlier on, I also shared it with you, but I guess it's because I don't understand also. Well, as I'm going through the document and the presentation, I'm impressed by the presentation, I must tell. In fact, it addresses some of the things and the challenges that I had observations about. But when I go through what is presented to Parliament, as you have said, I also experienced some difficulty. Maybe it's because I did not take time to read the document properly. I don't know. But what is important is that whatever we are going to come up with as these members must be something that we understand, because this is budgetary constraints. If we are to approve the budget, then it means we have to understand and find synergy, both in the PowerPoint presentation and in this document. What I have observed going through the document and your presentation, Dr. Vesa, is that I don't get the analysis of the industry, as the Honorable that side has said, that we need to understand what are the challenges that are there currently in the industry? What is it that we seek to do as the department to address those? If there is a need for policy review or introduction of new policies, that is something that must be captured in this strategic document. Having understood the analysis or the status of what is happening out there in the industry. The second one, I'll take it on your second round. It's around budgetary items, but I'll take it on your second round, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Makazi.
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, Honorable Ndabeni has covered me, because also I had the same concern about the presentation. The presentation, make no mistake, is good. But does it talk to the implementation part on the strategic plan for department? In other areas, yes. In other areas, no. And I can pinpoint those areas, if maybe that.
Velma? Honorable Troppen.
That is, Chair, before that. And I also noticed, Chair, that this strategic, there's no signature from the leadership of the department. Minister, Deputy, Acting DG.
Rohan.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you for this good presentation. I will go through it slide by slide. On slide 25, I went through it and I'm still concerned. I brought it up previously and I couldn't see where schools do give computer skills to grade R learners. But in some learners, they do not give those skills. We see that FET colleges, universities do get those e-skills. But I want to make sure, what role do you play to make sure that the skills are going to be there? So many schools do not have equipment. Some schools do have the advantage where they have computers in the schools, but some schools do not have, the majority of the schools, and the children are not taught computer skills and ICT skills. Then on slide 27, I just need to make sure if I do understand this correctly. Establish of 400 digital hubs in the rural areas. Does this mean that you're still going to establish this, or do you have those already and then also and the Tucson centers, are they are these additional hubs that you're talking on, or is this going to just do extension of the Tucson centers? And then on slide 29, sorry, slide 30, the total jobs created in the IT sector, is it already created? And the total is 115,000 over 3 years. Are you still going to create those jobs, or are you already, or have you already created it? And my question would be, if you're going to create it, will people with disabilities covered in those objectives to obtain jobs for the society? And then my second question is, for 2001-2012 financial year, there are 6 items where there's no budgetary items. I need to know, why are those items not budgeted for? Just a question. And then slide 32, the cyber security policy. I would like to know, how far are you with this policy? Is it going to be completed soon? And when will it be implemented? Thank you.
Daben, follow up before I respond.
Thanks, Chair. My other question is on the issue of the organizational structure, page 9 of your strategic plan. I see you've put your programs there, but I would like to get page 9 of the strategic planning document. I would appreciate if you go into detail those programs, who occupies the office, the DG, the DDG, and how many staff components. Because we are to go to the budget inside, therefore we need to get clarity. These things that you are setting up as priorities for the department, are we going to get people to implement that? Then we must be made to understand the organogram. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Vessel. Before maybe the department responds, maybe the item, you see, normally your human resource, it's key to your strategic plan implementation. I think the point is that you don't have a sense of type of human resource do you have as a department. And it forms your bulk of your expenditure to a certain extent. And we must approve the budget. As we are, where we are now, we don't know what we'll be approving in terms of human resource plan. I think that that's one problem. And we're dealing with the budget. Maybe the question which the Honorable Ndaben is trying to ask, because it will be difficult for the committee to expect it to deal with the budget, not knowing exactly in terms of your human resource plan what exactly we're dealing with. I think that's one issue which they are raising. But the second one which has been raised is the issue of maybe let's say for argument's sake, because this document is for South Africans. It's processed by Parliament, but for South Africans who must have access and be able to read it. Now, the challenge is that there is no industry analysis where we are today in terms of the industry. This plan which you put in place, where it's going to take the industry to. I think those are the broader questions which they are raising. Then you can respond to the other questions which they have also raised. The last one, Dr. Vessel, which is also broad, is that let's go to 2020. What is 2020? Are we still dreaming about? Is it in place? Because if 2020 is in place, you must tell us how will the industry look like in 2020. But you see, if you are still contextualizing about it, it's a separate thing. If you say 2020, you should be able to say 2020, this is our projection. Penetration, broadband is what will be with our projection for 2020. It means you have worked on it, you understand it in details, you know what will be the outcome in 2020. But if it's something which you're still thinking about as a department, then it becomes a different issue. You still have to do research and so on and so on and come and consolidate that. Now we are talking about 2020. But what the thinking is that when you say 2020, you should also be able to say what will be the industry look like in 2020 and these other things and so on into details, not just to say 2020 because it might be just a day, a year. Without a clear understanding what on 2020, how must we measure the department in terms of their output and so on in that 2020 which you are talking about and so on. But I will understand if it is at the developmental stage that we, the department, think about the 2020 and so on, but we have not yet concretized it to say, yes, indeed, now we are clear as a department what is 2020 we are talking about and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The first question around understanding, I think I will pass it on to Mr. Walakwasi to just give some input on that. The signatures, it's not there. I will ask Mr. Osman to respond to that. The digital hubs and the job creation issues, I will pass on to Mr. Piri. The cyber security question to Mr. Casey. I think we will deal with the 2020 issue. Sam?
Thank you very much, Acting DG. Just to respond to the question raised by the Honorable Member on the spending in the department, I would like to indicate that the 40% figure is actually not the correct figure. The department, as we speak, is spending at 78%. That is expenditure, including the commitments that are currently being released. And the departmental bid adjudication committee has, in the current quarter, processed a number of requests from units, and therefore we are hoping that by close of the financial year, which will take place in the next 2 weeks, we will have processed quite a number of requests and that came through.
Thank you, Mr. Glakasi. The 2020 and the flagship programs, I think we've just indicated in our presentation that we've done this e-barometer research. It will give us, at least at this point in time, a foundation, in understanding where we are, where we're going down, where we have to increase our input. So yes, I think we're measuring, so that we know where we, from what basis we start, and we will do that now on an annual basis to see what progress we made in terms of our own. We, at the moment, we're dependent on international studies and rankings, but I think for the first time we have our own. So that's the foundation for our work going forward. Then the presentation and the strat plan, I think perhaps the I can't instruct the minister or ask the minister, but I think the minister will have an input here. The idea was that we not, present the strat plan item by item, but rather take from the strat plan the focus areas. So what everything that we have presented is based on the strat plan. Nothing new has been added. It is based on the strat plan. We just thought that it will be more convenient to have a presentation, if we, perhaps we have assumed that the document will be read, so that people will understand what we're presenting. The signatures, Mr. Osman, can you?
Okay, thanks, Dr. Vesta. regard to the signatures, due to security concerns, sending electronic signatures to external printers was not advisable. Hence, it was decided that the names of the executive authorities, as well as their ranks and so forth, will suffice. It implies that they do not approve the relevant forwards or the strap plan as a whole. It was advisable not to send electronic signatures for obvious reasons to external printers. And other departments also following a similar approach going forward with being more cautious about electronic signatures. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Osman. Then the slide comments. Slide 25, the skills for schools. I think, going forward, that is very important. We have discussions with the Department of Basic Education, as we also have discussions with the Department of Higher Education and Training. One of the problems that we have in the country is the articulation between different levels of education, and that is being addressed. Even how we start skilling our kids from pre-primary. So that is something that we work on. Mr. Piri, if you can just talk to the digital hubs and the jobs being created.
Yes, thank you, DG. Could I just respond to this industry question that is being raised here, that how are we projecting the future going forward? We have a statistics that informs us that the potential growth of the telecoms market by 2015, you could be looking at a 251 billion market. No, we don't have that. We could send that to you. In essence, where you are now is that the state has is at 131 billion size of the telecoms market. We also understand the trend that the key driver for this market today is basically mobile, and the future would be broadband. So the ISP market in 2020 will be key to seeing the future going forward. The importance of having low cost of communication, which contribute to people accessing digital networks, becomes very important. So you want to ensure that infrastructure is rolled out in rural areas to make sure that people are connected to the network. In that way, you are actually shaping how people participate in that market. So the emphasis also, when we talk about universal service and access, has to be about how the people, we're talking about a people-centered process, so how people interact with that market. So the growth for the market for its own self will also not achieve key policy outlines there. I thought I'd just flag that in terms of what the statistics says, and there could be additions to that. In terms of job creation, we are dealing with a conundrum here around financing for job creation. The department has its normal annual allocation. As you know, the president has just introduced these priorities for job creation in his State of the Nation address. The allocation for the department for its normal program had already been made. So in areas where we're saying that we don't have budget, we mean to say that those had not been factored in. We are, however, looking at this opportunity for the jobs fund, and we are waiting to understand how can departments and industry tap into that fund. But what we are merely saying is to say that these are known areas which are critical for job creation. And if you were to achieve this, these are the numbers that we are working on. So those kinds of budgets there speaks to that. So in terms of these numbers that are indicated here, these are job projections. They are not yet created to the question earlier stated there. In terms of the 400 digital hubs, I could just link it to my earlier presentation on the measurement of growth. For instance, what we have had is in the past 3 to 4 years, you had a slow construction or establishment of telecentres, multipurpose centres, and cyber labs. These digital hubs are actually these centres that still continue to give people access to internet, to, for instance, telephony, in that sense. We are talking about, for instance, some of the centres which were launched last year in Inanda, where several ICT services could be accessed in those kinds of centres. Basically, these are centres which we believe contribute to people accessing ICT services in the country. And again, these are projections for the medium to long term. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Piri. Before I ask Mr. Kiersey to deal with the cybersecurity question, I would like to give Mr. Musaleri also an opportunity to talk to the question regarding where we are now in the Vision 2020.
Thank you. Thank you, King DJ. Thank you, Chair, and the honorable members, Minister. I will try to deal with the question that talks to where we are now in terms of also how do we project the future going forward in 2020. I think Mr. Piri has spoken to some numbers in relation to the telecom sector. I think we have got a clear understanding from where we are sitting in terms of where we are now, in terms of how the sector has performed in the last 15 or 16 years or so. In the sense that we have begun to see mobile penetration is more than 100%. The feature could not necessarily be around penetration anymore. It could be about consolidation in that sense. How then do you position the policy environment to respond to that consolidation, you know, in the future? And we know very well that from the TV market, we know very well that more than 90% have got access to TV in South Africa, and 80% access to a radio. So that begins to give us to say, how then do we fill that gap which is left, you know, in there? And there's competition happening in the market at a commercial level. From the postal point of view, we know very well that we do have close to 3,000 postal services, postal infrastructure in South Africa, which is not enough, you know, to be able to cater for what we are trying to achieve. Our target here, as agreed within the Universal Postal Union, is to ensure that one post office services 10,000 people. Currently, the statistics indicate that one post office in Africa services 18,000 people, and people have to walk distances. So the issue around postal infrastructure rollout has to talk to the fact that people are able to access such services within less than 5 kilometers of where they stay. So that's what we are looking at, you know, in terms of going forward. Internet, I think, you know, Mr. Perry spoke about broadband, 2%. For a country like South Africa, with ambitions as espoused in the new growth path, in terms of the job creation and access and building the knowledge economy, 2% we believe is not enough. Rosie can talk to, yeah, we'll talk to some of the things which are there in the broadband policy. So I think from a statistical point of view, I think we are very clear. But the challenge with regard to statistics is Africa around the ICT sector. There is no authoritative voice on who talks with authority on ICT statistics in South Africa. Depending on who you speak to, you get different figures. So the feature should be that we build the capacity within the department that we begin to talk authoritatively on statistical matters in a certain way. We know very well that when we come to trade statistics in South Africa, DTI is the authority. In the ICT sector, there's nobody. That is the fish. From the policy point of view, having looked at the quantitative statistics which are there, We then came to a conclusion that the challenges going forward around this is around the issue of, firstly, the issue of convergence. We do have the ECA, which I think from our own analysis, we'll need to ensure that there's a policy framework that shapes that future. We've got the ECA, which is separate. We've got the ECT Act, which talks to the E component, which is a critical component for integration between broadcasting and telecoms. So we believe that there's a need for us to integrate those two legislations. And then secondly, there's no coherent ICT policy in South Africa as a country. We don't have that. You've got bits and pieces of ICT initiatives happening nationally, provincially, or locally. And there's nobody who has got that authority to be able to say, this is the route that we are going to be taking when we move forward. That is one challenge. Hence, you find provinces, municipalities, and other government departments initiating ICT initiatives without the DOC participating in some of those things. Hence, you will need that coherent vision that I think we need to, that the minister spoke about. The third issue is that the postal sector is being modernized. Globally, the discussions now globally is around, the modernizing the postal sector using electronics. The challenge becomes to say, how then do you locate the postal sector within the broader ICT environment? It's no longer about brick and mortar. It's no longer about people going to the post office. It's about people sitting and using computers to order anything anywhere in the world, as it were. So we need to factor that in. This is where the world is going from the postal point of view. DTT, I think, poses a mega challenge to the broadcasting sector in general, in the sense that it opens up the frequency spectrum, which then allows for many players to play in the space. That then requires the need to develop new content and applications, for that matter, to service and be able to that we can service that market. So in that sense, how you regulate content going forward will not be your traditional way of how you do things. Because every day there's the online content that is there, how do you regulate and so on and so on. That's one of the challenges from a policy point of view. You then need to have a policy environment which then responds to that challenge which is being posed by that. Then the last issue is around increasing investment in infrastructure. Infrastructure, looking at infrastructure as in broadband, digital infrastructure, and so on, and also social infrastructure, which can be used by the people, as it were. The world is no longer about you invest in the roads, road infrastructure, water, but you need also, as you do that, have a mechanism to say you also build ICT infrastructure as the basic and cornerstone infrastructure for us to take us forward. And as your regulatory environment and policy environment must be able to respond to that, in the way to go. So I think from our side, we see the vision 2020 begin to deal with some of these issues going forward in that way. So I just want to put that into perspective. Thank you very much.
No. You see, before you make a follow-up, I just need to clarify the issue of 2020. You are not helping on the question I've asked. When you talk about 2015 MDGs, we know what have we committed as a country, how many percentage of... We see, you committed certain percentage to say this is what we'll achieve as a country. I'm saying to you now, in 2020, what is your view about broadband penetration? Can you tell me? In 2020, in your strategy and your thinking, what is it which we are thinking will be the penetration in broadband at that time? Because you are working to achieve that goal which you know what you want to achieve. But that is not what is here. That's why I'm saying if it's still something which you are conceptualizing as a department, but you can't say with authority, vision 2020, but you can't say what will be penetration of broadband in 2020. What will be the situation of fixed line in 2020? You can't. So it does not help. That's the issue I'm raising. I understand what you're saying. But But it does not help us as a committee or the future committee to hold the department to say, you said your vision will take us here. How far did you go? We can't. How do you measure 2020 if I can use a measurement now as a committee? How do we measure 2020 vision? We can't. And here we want to deal with things which is measurable. This is what you're going to do. We're able to hold you accountable. You can measure that input or output you're talking about. That's the issue we're raising, which is critical for us, so that we're measuring the progress around that particular matter. But the response, but I understand that maybe you are still at peace with those things and so on. I think that's the question which I was raising about the 2020. You see, when you talk about investment and innovation, you should be able to also to be clear, where is that investment going to come from? From private sector? Government investment? How? Who drives it and so on? It's not enough to say investment and innovation then keep quiet. Because we must measure. Our duty is to measure your performance. But a broad statement sometimes does not help the committee to measure what they are talking about and so on. And you need the details to say investment in your thinking, how much investment will come from public purse or from government investing on what, or what will be the private investment and so on. Because our assumption is that this strategic plan is coming after the broader consultation with the industry. The department knows what the industry investment will be in which areas and so on and so on. Then everything is together. Then you know how we are moving forward and so on. But you can separate private investment, public investment in terms of government and so on. So those are the issues which we are raising, which you don't seem to assist in terms of responding and so on. But I'll give back the members, it's okay. It's a work in progress. It's a work in progress as we're moving forward and so on. Because I'm emphasizing on that because we are also, as Parliament, now being told that whatever we do should be measurable. We can't just talk broader statements. We should be clear what is going to be achieved when and so on and so on. Honorable Damien.
Chairperson, you just asked what I wanted to ask. In fact, to clarify my concern around the 2020 matter. But then in addition to that, sorry, I wanted to understand if the department can help us understand the relationship between broadband infraco and then in the public enterprise and with your department. How is it coordinated? Do you have a relationship? How does it seek to assist us to arrive where we want to go to? Thank you.
Makazi.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, actually, I wanted to come before and actually interject Mr. Piri from the answers, from the answer that...
going to allow you to interject.
Oh, okay.
Unparliamentary.
No, that's fine. On the under expenditure of the department, and I just want to caution, Chair, the departmental officials. You see, Chair, the question was that Mr. Piri, when he answers, he says, on the document, what we have received here, the department has spent a 40% of its budget. Now he says to us, verbally, yes, I think Vilagai. Yes. He says to us, what is written is 40%. Verbal, he says the department is sitting at the 78%, of which in the department, the bid committee, they are busy processing some of the programs which are going to be implemented. That is now, before the end of financial year. Now the question is that, why were these programs not being implemented, not being funded, before they can wait for the end of financial year, that is March, for the department, if I'm correct. So what I'm questioning here, you have to give us, because we take what we have written, but what we have not written here, we're not going to take, because it's verbal. You are saying you are sitting at 78%. So this is what I'm questioning here. Even other officials, when you are presenting, give us what we have. Don't give us what you have not written, because we are going to question that.
No, thanks, Honorable Makas. You see, the issue is that, maybe let me indicate that the members, they do have access to your quarterly report to Treasury. So when you respond here, don't respond under the presumption that we don't have those reports. Because what I think members are talking about, it's the report which you submit yourself to the Department to Treasury in terms of your spending patching. Now, when you come here in the committee and start to disown that or not clarify what is the linkage between the two, it becomes a problem. It's either the information in Treasury is not the accurate one, or the one which you are giving is not accurate. I think the best thing is to link what you have submitted to Treasury and the question which has been raised here, how does the two link? Because the information is formal from the department to Treasury in terms of your expenditure pattern and so on. I'm sure that's what members they are raising, I suppose, around your expenditure and so on. So in the response of the question, just help us to link your submission to Treasury and what you are responding here. But so that we understand what might have happened from the last time you submitted to Treasury and say this is our expenditure. And in between from that time and now, what might have happened, which makes the expenditure to say it's where it is, Mr. Vilakas. I think that's the issue. But if you shall say 78%, it will cause confusion because we won't understand exactly since when, but the formal percentage in Treasury is around the figure which members are talking about.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think the 2020 issue, I think useful comments, but that is, as you've indicated, Chair, a work in progress. We're only starting to embark on the road now to deal with that matter. So we have to understand the current status, in the ICT sector, do our baseline studies, and the e-barometer project that we've reported on. That's one of the current work that we're doing to understand where we are now, and then to start working on the vision based on where we are now and how we measure that going forward to 2020. So that's really work in progress. I think the Minister also indicated that in his input. Then the 78%, Sam, if you can just clarify that.
Thank you, Acting DG. Maybe just to clarify the 78% figure. We're getting the figure from the books of the department. Now, what happens is that the information that there will always be a gap between the submission to Treasury, and because the information that we're talking about, it's literally as in like as of yesterday. So of course, at Treasury, the submissions will be done on a monthly basis. So perhaps that's what is causing the bit of a confusion. But the 78% figure is what is sitting in the departmental books as we are speaking right now.
So that is merely, that we don't say the 40% is incorrect. It was at a particular time in history, and Mr. Vilakasi actually indicated where we are now. So we don't have a problem with the 40%. Then the InfraCo DOC matter, Rosie, will you be able to comment on that?
Thank you, Acting DG. InfraCo has got an ECMS license, which means that they can only provide wholesale broadband. The relationship that we have with Infraco, that is DPE, emanates from the infrastructure cluster in terms of our work on broadband. Infraco's target is with regard to increasing the number of points of presence, that is increasing the wholesale coverage, so that whoever wants to subscribe in terms of the wholesale broadband will be able to access that. Obviously, I cannot give the numbers in terms of that target. But that's the relationship that we have. And we have an ICT work stream that the department chairs, where DPE and your likes of National Treasury that participate. And obviously, what we are feeding into that work stream is the target that Infraco is committed to with regard to increasing coverage of wholesale broadband.
Thank you, Rosie. If I can then ask you to deal with the question around cybersecurity.
Thank you again, Acting DG. With regard to cybersecurity, the target is to have an approved cybersecurity in 2011-2012. Obviously, the implementation of cybersecurity doesn't only deal with the Department of Communication. There is the component that we would have to implement. But because of the cross-cutting nature of cybersecurity, you definitely need the police to implement in terms of criminalization of the people who would commit cybercrime. You need your Department of Justice in terms of criminalization. Obviously, if a cyber threat emanates to a point where it now is an issue of national security, you need to involve your intelligence community. So there are a number of departments that are participating in the work stream on cybersecurity, with the department obviously our contribution being on the policy and certain implementations. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosie. I think there's a last question around HR and the inclusion of that in the strat plan. We can just report that we, as we speak, finalizing the new institutional arrangements in the department that will be finalized within the next few days. So that's what I can say about that, Chairperson.
Thanks, Dr. Reto. Before I can take any follow-up, tea is ready outside. Maybe we can just take tea for 10 minutes or so and come back and proceed. We should be finishing probably just before 12 or just after 12. I don't think we will be here for that long.
Thank you. just copies of the bulletin that we publish.
No,
after let me get you.
I don't have. I would appreciate it. Thank you.
But if you can just give me an idea, how do you predict, for instance, as we all know, last year the SABC had to be bailed out by Parliament, I think it was around about R1 billion. Just give us some insight there. Thank you, Chairperson.
David.
Thank you, Chairperson. The acting DG responded to the question, I'm not sure if it's you or one of your people, to the question of why the document is not signed, something to do with security reasons and the service provider. But we know, you know, that the document must have the minister's signature for it to be authentic to us, to be presented to Parliament and us, unless this is not the document that is presented to Parliament. Not signed. You presented it without a signature.
The problem is that we are talking to them, not to me. And you're supposed to be talking to me, you see. That's the only problem, and you'll have some difficulty if you do that.
So you can?
No. Yeah, you can proceed.
The second question, Chairperson. If I go through the stress plan, page 35, I think starts from page 32 to whatever pages. On the, for example, it is continuously repeated in other pages. But an example from page 35, strategy goal number 6. If I look at the PIs there, I'm not sure when you say level of alignment and implementation of the SOE cooperative strategic plans, how do you measure that? Talking to me as the layperson. If I have that and I have to do oversight over what you are going to do, which is the outcome improved performance, I thought as the output is aligned SOE cooperate, it will be something like 80% of what it has been agreed upon there will be achieved. To say the level of alignment, as I go through the document, it's there. Level of whatever, of implementation and all that. And to me, that is not specific enough to make my work very easy, of course, as a layman. If one can clarify. Thank you.
You see, to put it in simple terms, is that if you say 2011, 2012, article of association of SOEs review for the whole year. Does that what you mean? That for the whole year we'll be reviewing. Because you see, that's 2011, 2012. So there are some things that you'll be reviewing for the whole year. Only in 2012, 2013 you implement and so on. I think that's what Ndabeni is raising. So if you can just talk about that that particular issue. Any other member on Ndazi?
That one won't address what I want to understand, although Ndugov. But, for example, who improved SOE compliance with corporate governance protocols and legislation? The output here is corporate governance reviews. Then the PI, there is reports on compliance. I'm not sure if the reports determine what is it that we want to get. Because what is supposed to be the indicator is something that I must see. Now that the ANC has promised the people better life, what is it that I need to see?
so that I'm measured against. People must have houses, people must have access to free education and all that. That's what I want here. Reports, don't give me that. Thank you.
Does this?
Thanks, Chairperson. Concerning e-skills, I want to know, is the approach so positive? And will society, civil society organizations receive funding when taking it upon themselves, spreading the DCO's consumer and education awareness campaign strategy?
Mr. Valakas, can you just deal with that first one, the SAPC transfers, and then Mr. Osman again, the signatures, and I will talk to the strat plan and alignment and the skills. Sam?
Thank you, ADG. The transfers to the SABC are meant for a specific service delivery project, and these transfers are ring-fenced. As the Honourable Member would notice that the budget that the SABC requires is actually very substantial compared to what the department is giving. So really the sustainability and the funding of the SABC to a large degree is dependent on the generation of its own revenue. These transfers are meant for just specific and ring-fenced projects. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, ADG. Let's see with regards to the question on signatures. I think, as I mentioned, for the security purposes, however, the document is tabled in Parliament through a letter via the Minister to the Speaker of Parliament, and that letter, the tabling letter, was signed by Minister. And in the Treasury regulations with regards to contents of strat plans, it doesn't indicate that the forward by Minister needs to be signed for it to be an approved plan. But however, the tabling letter was signed by Minister. That went to the Speaker of Parliament for the tabling of the document. Then moving on to the issue of performance indicators, I think there's various schools of thought when it comes to performance measures and indicators. But basically, the department, if I use this example that was asked upon, with regards to alignment of plans ensured, with regards to alignment of plans, shareholder compact signed, and so forth, what the performance indicator seeks to say is that at any given point in time, how would you measure progress made in terms of the target? So suppose that example again, if we say yes, I have alignment, we need to ask, in order to measure that alignment, what is that level of alignment? Then you will say it is only 50% aligned, or the 10 issues, only 5 are aligned, the 10 relevant issues, 7 aligned, and so forth. That will tell you the level of alignment. So it's basically a way or a means of a performance measure or a performance indicator to say how well or how not well we are doing with regards to alignment, the level of alignment. I mean, if it would have been more straightforward if it was a quantifiable target. If we're building 50 schools, it would be the number of schools. At any given point in time, how would you measure how well you're doing? You'll measure the number of schools, it's the 10, 20, 30. But given the nature of this target, you'll measure the level of alignment in that respective target. So that's the thinking.
Just to add to that as well, I mean, we have 12 government outcomes, and the SOEs are supposed to consider those outcomes in their own strategies and planning, and if there are 12 and they focus on 5, then we can determine the level of alignment going forward. So that could be measured in terms of the outcomes that are central to our work at this point in time. The e-skills question I didn't get entirely. If the Honourable Member can just repeat the question for me, Chairperson.
Aziz?
Is the department approached positive and will civil society organizations receive funding when taking it upon themselves to spreading the DOC's consumer education awareness strategy campaign?
Yeah. It is part of the strategy of the Issues Institute that we have, because we have to massify the skilling of our people, you know, getting many people to be skilled, like they've done in India, you have to support and use all institutions. And that is why it's built on a collaborative model, where we use universities, we use LIT colleges, schools, NGOs, but of course the modules that will have to be taught will be developed by the Iskus Institute, so that we make sure it can be quality controlled. So yes, I mean, we will engage with all institutions, NGOs included.
Thank you. Microphone is on. Lazi, Mike.
Sorry.
Dr. Ref, can you repeat your response? The problem is if one mic is on, Hanfa does not record. That's the problem we're having. If maybe you can repeat your response, Dr. Ref.
I forgot. yes, no, in e-skilling the nation, we have to make sure that we collaborate and build networks with all institutions and people that can provide skilling based on modules and curricula that will be developed by the eSkills Institute. Of course, some of these curricula and modules will be offered by the Institute itself, but others by our partners in society, including academic institutions and civil society institutions.
Thank you. You see, members, before I proceed to anyone, so that we can finish, we'll just humbly come to request that all the people supposed to sign here, let them just give us a signed statement. The reason which have been advanced here are just not acceptable. We've got the strategy from the presidency, calling Minister Collins Chaban, it has been signed. And there was a covering letter which was also signed when it was accompanied to Parliament. So the reason which are advanced, we can't accept them. The reality is that those documents must be signed until communicated otherwise about the signatures. I don't think it's a matter which you must do it to and from. So all we are going to request that those who are supposed to sign their statement, can they do that and forward us a signed copy of statements so that as Parliament you are able to understand that this is what statements with authority and so on. The explanation maybe when formal communication comes about the document no longer being signed and so on, we'll entertain it at that time. But for now, those statements, they don't seem to be an authentic statement and formal statement presented to the Honorable House Parliament. So I think we must just handle that in that way and so on. Honorable Makazi.
Chair, I want to request the department, let's go to page 21 on their strategic, let's look at the strategic goal, the key outcome and the key output. I just need a clarity or more understanding. You are saying increased broadband penetration and accessibility and affordability. That is the key outcome. Now, the output, 10% broadband household penetration. Underneath, you are saying broadband legislation. My question is that isn't that on the output, that broadband legislation should come on top where the 10% broadband household penetration, and that actually that objective then it comes underneath, because here we're talking about the rollout. I just need to clarify. I am confused, so I just need to clarify. And on the output, when you're saying broadband legislation, what does it mean? I can see on the indicator you're saying level of implementation of the broadband legislation. Can I? And then again, I just want to ask a question, Chair. Does the department have any program or any plan about the small SMEs program? And if you have a plan, what is it exactly? On the
clarity is that you are meaning small SMEs in terms of broadband or general, broadband. Any hands, you can respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. The broadband product, will you?
Okay, thanks, ADG. I'm not sure if I fully understand the question, but I'll try. Basically, the first column is your key outcome. That's the long term, can be seen as your outcome or impact in the long term. Having achieved all of the multi-year targets, we want to see increased broadband penetration, accessibility, and affordability. And these are the multi-year targets we've identified. So the order, if that's what's been questioned, is it's in line with, if you need to read it row by row, the first target being the broadband penetration itself. The output would be we want to see 10% broadband penetration. The broadband legislation target, the output will be an actual broadband legislation, what we can put on the table. With regard to provinces and municipal broadband guidelines, the tangible or the output is provinces and municipal broadband guidelines. The output's obviously much more easier and tangible to measure. However, the outcome is the long-term, the impact we want to see stemming from all of these interventions.
Thanks, Chair, through you, Chair, again. But yeah, I think you are correct. But what I am questioning here is the ordering of the call, of the caller. Isn't that the broadband legislation should come on top, and then your rollout come underneath? Because first you have to have your legislation, and your legislation it will inform you about the outcome.
Yes, you are correct. Although it's going to all happen concurrently, you'll see the targets are annual targets. So concurrently, it will happen concurrently, just a matter of sort of the way the document was laid out. But irrespective of what comes above the other, they all have to be achieved in those time frames and will have to run concurrently. But yes, logically, you'd want to see it that way. That's correct.
Okay. Chair, on the same note, can I just get also a clarity? What baseline have you used to determine the 10%, the 4%, 2011, 2012, 4%, your penetration, and then 2012, 7%, and then 2013, 14, it's your 10%. What baseline did you use?
Maybe before you respond on that question, we mean broadband penetration in general. Which broadband penetration are we talking about? Fixed line? No, I'm just trying to understand what are we talking about? Because that's to be too general is also a problem. Come the year when we measure the 4%, what will be measuring broadband penetration in terms of what, mobile? I just want to understand what might be the exact measure which we are going to use when we come to, or the combination of everything which will be happening and so on top of the question raised by Makas. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Member. The baseline that we are using at the time when we were finalising the policy, it was at around 2%. I think we had used the information that we got from BMIT. We did note that the information that we had certain limitations, in the sense that it only included your fixed line, that is your ADSL and 3G. There was no, which mainly deals with PC usage, but no accounting towards if you access broadband through your mobile device. What we did as a department, taking note of the limitations of the baseline that we were working with, we then undertook a study to appoint a service provider who would then assist us to come up with a more quantifiable baseline. We are now in the process of finalizing that appointment of a service provider, which I think would assist us to ensure that with regard to broadband, we not only include the issues of people who access broadband through PCs, but also accounting also for the issue of accessing broadband through a mobile device. Earlier on, when Temba was talking about the e-barometer, he spoke to the issue of community centers or telecenters, which is also another critical area for us in terms of quantifying people who have got access. Because when you look at a scenario of a village, access should not necessarily be limited to people who've got a PC in a home. But if there is a telecenter within a walking distance that a person can go to, we have to have some kind of a methodology of how do we account that, so that when we talk about people who've got access to broadband, we do also account to the number of people who also have got access to broadband through walking to a telecenter or some kind of an internet cafe. So the study will assist us to deal with certain kind of things, taking note of the dynamics that we are working with as a country, so that we customize the baseline to what we are working for with. And then that will then advise us properly to say what then should be the realistic forecasting, which we believe that I think once we conclude the study, it will enable us to really come up with a proper scenario planning of how we can project broadband penetration, take into consideration, like, for example, things like ICTs in education is a critical element with regard to increasing the broadband penetration. So there are a number of activities that we're busy with that can assist us to focus a proper penetration, how we can truly grow the broadband penetration in South Africa.
My apologies. I just want to piggyback from what the DGG, what has just said. I thought by now, Chair, if we talk about telecenters, I think by now that the department, maybe they have a report that indicates how many, you know, telecenters we have. And by now, they would be giving us that information, those statistics. So I don't know. Because I know this, the issue of the telecenters is being implemented jointly with the GCIS. I think they call them what? Tusong centers.
No, thanks. You see, I agree when the department is saying it can happen sometime, because anyway, broadband penetration has been continuing without any policy direction from the department. So in that sense, I agree, if that's what you mean, that without a legislation, it doesn't matter, it will happen, because it has been happening anyway, without any policy direction and so on. So in that context, but I if that's the context we are talking about. But you see, the problem maybe which make things to be difficult is that maybe something you must work on. Because if you talk about this penetration in general term, fixed, mobile, and so on, I don't know
Exactly. But I understand the DDG response around the particular issue. That is difficult because information is also difficult to get and so on. But I would thought you'll be able to zoom and focus and start to say broadband penetration in terms of fixed line will be 2%. In terms of mobile, these are the percentage. And in terms of these are the percentage. So we are able to measure. Because even our WISIS goals and so on are measured in terms of fixed telephone and so on. So if it's just a mixed bag, we can't see where we are making progress. The percentage, it might be maybe mobile, but nothing for fixed and so on, and but still you are achieving the percentage and so on. Maybe it's one area, DG, which you need to look into and just pay some focus. So that we are a little bit focused in terms of the broadband penetration we're talking about and so on. But you can respond to the member, DG.
Yes. penetration, broadband penetration is a difficult issue. We use in developed country indices and methodologies where access to ADSL and PCs, that's how they measure. But in a developing country, like Mr. Kees has indicated, people access in many different ways. Tucson centers, families pool together money and buy a computer for a number of families so children can access. There are ICT cafes and so on. In schools, so that is difficult to grapple with and come up with a methodology, but that is what we're working on. That is what Mr. Kees has indicated. We use the easy way of measuring penetration, but we will soon have our own model that will give us a much clearer view of this. Telecenters, of course, there are many studies and information on that. We can provide the piece, the portfolio committee with regarding the successes, the problems that we experience in telecenters, in the telecenter program. And in rolling out new such centers, we're dealing with the problems. We've learned there are many mistakes made, not only in South Africa, but worldwide in terms of telecenters. But we're accommodating those learnings into our rollout of new such centers in South Africa.
Thanks, DJ. Can we go to Ndabeni?
The last question on the broadband. Chair, there was a broadband policy which was published in 2009. But I don't know how far is the department with that policy.
Can you deal with
that? Thank you, Acting DG and Honourable. The policy, if I'm correct, was approved by Cabinet in March, 2010. I will just double-check the date. One of the key issues that is being dealt with regard to the broadband policy, which is what we are busy with the implementation, is the establishment of the broadband intergovernmental committee, because one of the weaknesses that we have as a country is the uncoordinated approaches, where you've got national doing this, provinces doing this, municipalities doing this. So those are the key activities that we are trying to deal with, but also to ensure that we are aligned, because you'll find a scenario where Department of Basic Education at national level will have its own target to say this is how they're going to be dealing with issues of ICTs in education. And you'd find that a province also wants to come up with their own rollout of broadband. And in that context, they would be talking about the same connectivity of schools. So the approach with regard to the Intergovernmental Broadband Committee is to mainly coordinate so that we can optimize the utilization of resources of government.
Thanks, Chair. On page 48, up to, I think it's 60, but the budget breakdown, whatever page, that is the last page. I'm looking at just 2 or 3 is a point of interest. I'm looking at your shredder, the difference between your shredder that's going to be used by the ministry and then the one that is going to be used by the deputy minister, the difference in terms of numbers. What informs that? Your fax machine, 14,400 rand, even if you are going to decrypt or encrypt or whatever, NIA will do that free for you, at least your government. I don't understand why would we get a fax machine of 14.4, but it's the numbers. I believe these numbers are put here so that your budget is informed by them. Both those are your estimates. Yes, that's what I'm saying. But even if you estimate, if something right now is 5,000 rand, you would put an estimate to 8, probably 10 or 15% to that, not 70%. Do you get what I'm saying? Currently, you're buying a printer at 5.5. Then when you budget for the next year, it can be 15,000 here in South Africa. Probably you say 7,000, you estimating as you are, but at least would add 10 to 15% of that, not 70%.
I thought this question will never come before we close the meeting. But it has come, DG.
Chairperson, these are estimates. These are the way we ensure that we have proper planning. This could depend on the quality of the shredder, also in terms of volume. Perhaps you need a small volume and deal with small volumes in the one office and lots of paper in the other office. But this is not that based on invoices. This is very really basic. Doesn't mean we will buy a shredder for that amount, but it's just to give us an indication as to what we're planning for, so that we have the item listed. And that, perhaps Sam, if you can come in as well.
Thank you, ADG. Perhaps just one point to mention to the honourable member is that the IT requirements of the department are procured through CETA, through transversal contracts, and these prices are determined by CETA. So unfortunately, the department is not at liberty to determine that a computer which costs 7,000 in the market cannot pay for it at CETA for, say, 20,000. Unfortunately, we are obliged to procure through CETA, and therefore these estimates are based on the prices that are charged by CETA.
I make a follow-up, or maybe my follow-up is a question. Is it standard on the strategic document to put your asset, this asset management, the items, specifically the items that you need? For instance, I know somewhere it's page, I can't remember, where you have said you need to also to acquire a bar fridge, and there are also a printer for chief director, a printer for director. What I'm asking here, the essence of my question, is it standard to put these items in a strategic document and be specific? Because I would tell why I'm asking the reason. Because for me, a strategy, and more especially when you present a strategy document, this is a high-level document where you capture the content, the things that you are going to do in your department. Because for me, this, I think it can be it can be put in an internal document. But what you can do for us to know how you use the money, you can put equipment. I'm asking you this, it's a standard way of because I find it really, it's odd. For me, you know, because it's a strategic document, it's a high level document, and
you need brains, logic.
Yes, you know, according to these regulations, it's a matter of interpretation. And I hear what the Honourable Member is saying. But according to the regulation, it says the strategic plan must include details of proposed acquisitions of fixed or movable capital assets. It also says it should include details of proposed acquisitions of financial assets or capital transfers and plans for the management of financial assets and liabilities. So I think different departments interpret this differently. I mean, in the past we have included this in our strategic plans, and I think what happened is it was done in the same way as it was, you know, done in the past. But I hear exactly what you're saying, but I think it's interpretation, what detail actually means. And that is now really detail. This should perhaps not be in there.
No, thanks, Dr. Fez. I think as you explained, but I know members, one day you'll come without it, they will want it. So keep on doing it. You might not put it, but put it aside. Because one day you'll come without, then they'll look at the equipment, expenditure, which is ballooning, and say, but hey, what you'll be doing here? Can you tell us exactly? So just to be safe, keep it somewhere. It might not be in the document, but they might request it. If the expenditure balloon and so on. In closing,
thank you, Chairperson. This is merely a request. Because I think we as members of this portfolio committee has got a very important task and oversight over the Department of Communication on behalf of the people of South Africa. And I want to request that, for instance, if the minister put out a statement, sometimes we read afterwards in the newspapers, we read about the statement of the minister, and it's very important information also for us to be sort of informed every day, every movement. But that is, and I presume I'm talking about the documents in the public domain, when the minister took a position on certain things, and also in the Department of Communications, there's every day a lot of things happening, important meetings, whatever, and the department take a decision. Will you please put us on the mailing list so that we can receive on a daily basis, whatever, when there's important information, we can receive it, and then I can read it firsthand. So then I didn't have to read an interpretation. I'm not saying the journalists don't do their job, but I want to read it firsthand, without any interpretations or whatever. I think this is, if this request can be done, I will be very glad. Thank you, Chairperson.
Anything?
Fine. I'm looking at the pricing again of notebooks. If you can explain what your CETA requires you to allocate for your minister and deputy minister, and then the difference between the notebook that belongs to the minister and that of the chief director, both the prices are different.
Yes, Mr. Villegas.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the notebooks for Office of the Deputy Minister, I think the quantity there is actually slightly more because there's about 4 notebooks there. Whereas if you look in other...
I just want you to respond exactly to what I'm saying. Eh? The others, I see others, we have them at 20,000 and then others are at 24,000 rand. Others are at 22,000 rand together with printers.
Perhaps one point to bring to the attention of the Honourable Member is the fact that the machines that are used are different. And therefore, the prices will also differ. For example, an HP compared to an Apple machine, they will definitely be differing in prices. So that's what informs the variances. But I think at the same time, it's also important to indicate that these are estimates. These prices may be slightly more based on the increases by from CETA suppliers, or they may be slightly less. So I think it's the reason why we've put them as estimates is to make sure that where there are variances, we can then be able to explain.
Estimate is what we understand, Mr. What's his name? Vilagas. So you don't go back to that one. My interest is in the department taking interest that all these people need to have computers. Then this is what we want to go into the computer. This is the software that we want. Whether it's HP or whatever, but this is the software that we want. Then to say, okay, if we settle for the deputy minister to use Acer, how come you can't settle for the chief director to use Acer? Why would you want her to use Dell if that's costly to what we have agreed on the first one?
Dr. Verson?
Yes, I think those are the things that we will consider when we start buying. You know, I mean, these items, it came from a different branches and so on. So, but when we start buying and we have to standardize, like, for example, the department is currently standardizing on Dell. So there will have to be a motivation if you want to buy an Acer, or you have to buy an Apple. But you also have to go through CETA if you want to acquire these things. So the price here is merely indications and not real numbers that we will estimations.
Can I?
Makan.
Yeah. Acting DG. But at the very same token, I think we don't want also to risk the sensitivity of documents that are coming from cabinet to the minister. You must also take into consideration that there is that element, and we wouldn't like to see sensitive documents via WikiLeaks pipe. I think in South Africa we don't need that.
I think it is important what Unsege is saying. I believe most ministers is privileged to have those equipment being inspected by the security agencies of the country. I believe so. Because you must have, all the time, you must have a security line. That's my understanding. And then if that's the case, it means from the PA or the receptionist in his or her office must also have that, because the correspondence that goes to the minister via the same people. Then if you are going to have these CETA determined pricing that are ridiculous on this document, whereas they don't address the serious needs of the security of the office with regards to the correspondence is going to cost us, honestly. We will continuously have information that we get from the guys out there, whereas we are supposed to be the first ones to receive. Even the minister at times gets the correspondence and then it's already been reported by our friends, the media. So I think it's also important when you do, Dr. Fess, your estimations of the items, that you take that into consideration, the security of the information. Thanks.
I can see that is the intelligence part of work, of your work, which is talking. You know, it's okay. But we're in communication, so okay. No, it's fine. Or it go together, okay. No, it's okay, I agree. I think we should try to sum it up so that we are able to move around these issues and so on. But I think the issue which members are raising, one thing is that the human resource plan for the department to implement your strategy is very important, because we must know who is going to implement your strategy.
and what capabilities are you having in the department to do so? Which we'll talk around the issue of your workforce and also your portfolio organization. You see, Minister, I've noted, maybe it's because the meeting is Friday, but some of your public entities, they don't seem to be here. I don't know where they are going to derive their mandate. Because we thought that the OC is the leading and so on, but some are here, which we appreciate and so on. But maybe it's because the meeting is Friday, we'll think so. But I think it's a matter which you must take up. You can't have just public entities within your department decide to absent themselves on a strategic plan of the department. We've just noted that, but in a light note. But it's a matter that maybe your department will have to take up, take it up and so on. But the issue is that what we need, acting DG, is that for what exactly DOC doing to update the core competencies in key positions. That will be important for us because we know that at the end of strategic plan, we will be able to implement it and so on. And also we need to understand, because we have been saying the industry is fluid and so on, what then special initiatives with regard to attracting, recruiting, developing and retaining talent, which will include your succession plan as a department. I'm just saying that because human resource is key to any organization to survive and so on. So we love to see whether you are interacting with those issues, because for some time DOC has been a Hollywood, others are saying Hollywood because of acting and so on. But we understand that the situation warranted that at one point to happen and so on. But the other issue, DG, which we like you to assist us, we appreciate the fast track facts about the analysis of the industry which has been made here. But we like to understand as a portfolio committee exec, how is DOC analyzing and monitoring the development in the ICT? Because we are the leading department. We might have weaknesses here and there, but the fact is we are the leading department and so on. So we like us to see around that, how do you analyze the industry and also monitor those developments so that you are able to give us a broader view around those particular issues. You see, what is that your strategic plan? I think you should also be able to say to us, if it's successful, let's say 100% you implement it, by next year everything has been done, how will be the contribution to the GDP by this strategic plan? Because this strategic plan got impact in the sector and so on. Now, can you be able to say what will be a general contribution to the GDP, GDP of the country? Your job creation, which we have also tried to address, penetration rates for different, whether fixed line, broadband, and so on, retail prices, what will be that, which one of your entities is doing that, and so on, and the investment and innovation. You see, it's key that we understand those general issues so that as we engage, we locate your strategy in achieving these bigger goals which the country is facing, and so on, which to a certain extent I think it has been covered in your document, except few of them which are lacking here and there. But one issue which has just come into mind when the members were asking a lot of questions is that, you see, I had an opportunity to read your Canada, FCC, Commission and these other countries. What I don't pick up is that all these countries, they accept that in this sector there are lot of risks, but you don't mitigate risk here. To say government, say if there's a huge technological change, how do you absorb the risks as a department? It's not mitigated. If it is mitigated, it's maybe at the lesser extent that maybe we can't pick it up vigorously. Just to uplift that, because it's important that the department analyze the market, understand it, and also understand the risk in the market. So that when anything happens, you are able to absorb those shocks and other things and so on. And also the opportunities, which you have spelled out clear. I think you have done well in some of those issues and so on. I think that will assist us to try and move forward. I raised the issue of investment initially, but it remains key. If we say investment in the industry, how much will come from the private, how much government is going to pump in terms of investment. You've got your USASA, which is under your department. Are we planning any smart subsidies to, you know, all those things? What exactly do we want to deal with this thing? Because we must be able to say part of expanding the infrastructure, accessibility and so on, what is the thinking of the department to drive USASA in terms of making sure that the Universal Service Fund and so on is being utilized also to achieve those goals. I'm just saying, general, those issues will able to sort of summing up what the sector which want to achieve and do. But I understand that part of the problem is that the way treasurer also wants you to the template sometimes does not allow you, give you a leeway. But it becomes a problem to us because we can't comprehend what you are trying to do, where you are, and other things and so on. But if that is not going to cost a lot of work just to do that. But we know when I was raising the question of broadband, I thought at one point you'll be able to be explicit to say broadband, fixed line, broadband, wireless, broadband, 3G, broadband, LTE. You see, because the industry is moving. It's not standing. So that we understand that we are including 5G and so on. We are targeting something which is moving and so on. The issue of penetration, you have covered it very well, but you just need to quantify it in terms of, as you were saying, also that it's difficult sometimes and so on. But those are the issues which we must battle with and understand, especially ourselves as a committee. Because you see, the one other thing is that so that when we speak about the progress, we can be able to speak with that also with the authority and so on because of that thing. I think those are the issues for me which I think we just need to tighten up, which not necessarily that you are not here. Some of them, most of them, they are here. It's just that to tie them up in such a way that it's clear as you go through the document, you are able to pick them up in a clearer way and so on. Now, I would think that, but I must take this opportunity to say, I think there is work which is done in the department. We can see that you are moving, but the request which we'll have is that before maybe you come back, because I just thought at that time you'll be able to give more facts about your human resource, who's going to implement this plan, what is your thinking around that. To be able to contrast also the two. You see, you've got the strategic plan for 2010-2013, you've got the 2011-2014. It's fine. But there are issues which are here, which are very important. Your radio community station, your community TV and other things, which they seem to fall off here on the current one. But they are part of your presentation, some of those issues. But all what you say, can we just start to pull together everything, just to look around that, so that we pull back those things? Because if I want to be biased, which I'm not supposed to, is that the key of the ANC resolution is talking about community radio station and TV, community broadcasting TV. So if it's not, it seems to fall off on your key strategic document. I'm sure it becomes a challenge from the ANC side in terms of how do you comprehend such a thing and so on. But those are the issues which I'm just raising, which maybe when we reconvene to finalize the issue of your strategic plan and budget, we'll be able to tie them up and so on. But there is a progress, noticeable progress, that you are moving forward in terms of dealing with these things and so on. But maybe by way of proposing at one point, maybe we'll have just to do, you see, your annual report sometimes does not reflect exactly what you do. It's again the template from Treasury. But maybe we need to find a way, how can we also engage the department in terms of the work which you have done in a manner which we can understand ourselves not the template, you know. But those are ongoing engagement which we need to engage ourselves as a committee and the department so that we understand maybe this format can work for us to understand the report much better than the template and the other thing and so on. The last issue raised by Honorable Dabin, I'm sure it's a matter which the committee might love to engage with the our sister committee of public administration and so on in relation to the sit-up crisis and so on, whether it's value for money and so on. I think if your hands are tight that you must use sit-up, there's nothing you can do, and their estimate and so on. But I think it's a matter moving forward. We might have to engage our sister portfolio committee around that and see what measures or what can be done and so on around those particular measures. There's nothing much you can do. But you take my advice, Dr. Veso. Next time, put your details but separate somewhere. Don't cut them completely and don't have it. Board members might change their mind one day when you come and say, where are the details of the equipment and the other thing? So you must be able to be able to say, hey, I do have it and so on, but you said at one point it's not necessary and these other things and so on. Minister, I'm sure we are pleased about the progress and the leadership which you provide in the department and so on. No, things will get better as we move forward. Rome, I'm told, was not built in one day. It took a lot of years and decades to deal about those issues. Thanks very much. We'll come back to you about the future date and so on in terms of completing the outstanding issues and so on. Thanks very much, Minister Tichi, and your support, sir. Thanks. And honorable members. At last you can go. I can see. What is the problem about going home today? I can see you don't want to go away. Okay, no, thank you. Then you are dismissed.